Imagine for a second that you are bleeding money. You're losing your absolute best talent. Your most brilliant people are just walking out the door, and you're falling further and further behind your competitors every single day.
Right. It's a nightmare scenario.
Totally. And now imagine that this isn't because of a market crash or like a new regulation or some stroke of terrible luck. It's because of a silent, completely invisible problem that you actually created yourself on purpose.
Yeah, it is the ultimate self-inflicted wound. And I think the wildest part is that for a long time, the industry just accepted it as, the normal cost of doing business.
Just par for the course.
Exactly. You took out a structural loan to get your product off the ground. Assume you'd just pay it back later.
Right. Which brings us to today. We're going into a deep dive on a really fascinating report from the software development firm Technigen. It's titled The Technical Debt Reckoning: Survival Strategies for OC Startups.
It's a great read. Really eye-opening.
It really is. And our mission here is to explore why technical debt, which, let's be honest, has historically been brushed off as this vague kind of whiny engineering complaint,
Oh, I see.
why it has suddenly become a highly quantifiable, absolutely existential threat to startups here in 2026.
Yeah, the landscape has completely shifted.
So whether you're an engineer writing the code or a startup founder trying to keep the lights on, or honestly, just someone who uses software every day and wonders why, I don't know, a simple new feature takes 8 months to launch, understanding this hidden cost is going to completely change how you view the whole concept of moving fast.
Okay, let's unpack this.
Let's do it.
We have to start with the numbers because this report moves technical debt out of the realm of abstract theory and just slaps a massive, terrifying receipt on the table.
The math in this 2026 data is staggering, primarily because it proves that the cost of a defect compounds over time. Like, it is not a linear curve at all.
Right.
If a developer introduces a flaw because they're taking a shortcut, say, hard coding a value instead of building a proper configuration, and they catch it in the development phase, that baseline cost to fix it is basically 1x, just a few minutes of typing.
A big deal.
But if that flaw makes it into the quality assurance stage,
Right.
fixing it suddenly costs 10x.
Because now it's not just the developer. You have QA testers flagging it, product managers filing bug reports,
Exactly.
and the original developer has to like stop what they're currently working on, reload the old context into their brain, and hunt down the issue. The friction just multiplies.
It really does. And if that defect caused by a technical shortcut makes it all the way into production, like live in front of your users, the cost to fix it explodes to 100x.
100 times. That's insane.
Right. Because you're dealing with customer support tickets, panic hotfixes, potential data corruption, database rollbacks, and just massive brand damage.
Yeah, your reputation takes a hit.
And that compounding interest on bad code leads to the core statistic of the Technigen report. The average software engineering team today spends between 23% and 42% of its time just dealing with technical debt.
Wow.
Almost half their day is spent fighting the code base instead of, building new functionality.
Okay, let's ground that in reality, because the report gives this incredibly sobering mathematical example. Imagine a fairly standard 15-person Orange County startup.
Okay, pretty common size.
Yeah, let's say the average engineer's salary is $150,000. If you take just a 30% time drain, which is right in the middle of that average, that equals $675,000 every single year in pure opportunity cost.
Just gone.
Just gone. You are paying nearly $750,000 for your team to effectively tread water. It's the equivalent of nearly five senior developers sitting in a room doing absolutely nothing all year.
It's a brutal realization for a lot of founders.
But I have to push back here for a second. I'm putting myself in the shoes of a founder right now. Isn't the entire defining mantra of a startup to, move fast and break things?
Sure, historically.
Like, if you don't cut corners to ship your minimum viable product, you might run out of runway and not survive your first year anyway. So isn't this debt just the cost of doing business?
It raises an important question. For the last two decades, move fast and break things was universally accepted. But the report highlights the specific catalyst that makes 2026 different.
Which is?
The absolute necessity of AI integration. It used to be fine to move fast and break things because you were just building basic web applications. users forgave a clunky interface if the core tool worked.
Right, they just wanted the functionality.
But today, if your code base is tangled, heavily coupled, and undocumented, it is physically impossible to bolt on modern AI features.
Yeah, you can't just slap a machine learning model on top of a disorganized mess.
You really can't. AI models require clean, structured, predictably formatted data. Startups that built for extensibility from day one are shipping AI recommendation engines or predictive analytics in, like, a matter of weeks.
Wow.
Meanwhile, the high-debt startups simply cannot compete. Their foundation literally cannot support the weight or the data ingestion requirements of the new technology.
It's like trying to install a state-of-the-art smart home security system in a house that still has knob and tube wiring from 1920.
Exactly. The house is going to catch fire.
To understand why that wiring is so bad, the report actually breaks down what this looks like under the hood. It categorizes the most destructive types of debt, starting at the absolute bottom layer, which is the database.
Yeah, database schema debt is the most expensive penalty a company can carry. It usually piles up right in the first 12 to 18 months, because in those early days, business requirements are constantly shifting.
Everyone's just pivoting all the time.
Right. Founders are just trying to solve immediate problems. So the data model gets designed completely haphazardly.
The report mentions things like overloaded columns and missing foreign key constraints. For the non-engineers listening, how does that actually break a business?
Okay, so an overloaded column is essentially treating a highly specific database field like a junk drawer.
A junk drawer. Okay.
Yeah. Instead of having separate organized fields for a user's address, shipping preference, and time zone, a rushed developer might just dump all of that data into one giant text string in a single column just to save time.
Oh, I see.
Later, when your new AI feature needs to analyze user time zones to optimize push notifications, it can't. It has to sift through thousands of junk drawers.
That sounds incredibly slow.
It is. And a missing foreign key constraint. That's skipping the rule that ensures data relationships actually make sense. Without it, you can accidentally delete a customer's account while leaving all their active billing subscriptions floating in the system as ghost data.
Wait, so you're charging credit cards for accounts that no longer exist?
Exactly. And fixing that structure in a live SaaS application means you have to migrate a high-traffic production database without causing a single second of downtime for your active customers.
That sounds like open-heart surgery while the patient is running a marathon.
That's a perfect way to put it. And because that bedrock is so messy and terrifying to change, developers naturally become paralyzed. They don't want to touch the core code, which exposes the next layer of the problem, operating without a safety net.
You're talking about test coverage debt.
Yes. When startups ship fast, they almost always skip writing automated test suites. And the insidious thing is, this lack of testing doesn't feel expensive at all on day one. It actually feels incredibly efficient.
Right, until something breaks in production. Because without automated tests acting as tripwires, you don't actually know if your new code just broke a completely unrelated feature on the other side of the application.
Exactly. The broader mechanical issue is that code written rapidly without tests is usually written in a way that makes it untestable in the future. It's just a massive, tangled hairball of logic.
You can't even test it if you wanted to.
No, to add unit tests later, you literally have to rewrite the core logic first, just to untangle it. In the meantime, you are paying for this debt in the form of hundreds of manual QA hours, massive regression bugs, and developers who are absolutely terrified to deploy their code on a Friday afternoon.
And that fear of deploying creates this devastating ripple effect. Because they're terrified of breaking their own fragile code, they stop updating the external systems their code relies on. Which brings us to dependency debt.
Yes. Outdated NPM packages, old Python libraries, Docker-based images that haven't been touched in years.
This is where technical debt crosses the line from a productivity drain into an acute company-ending security risk, right?
100%. Startups ignore these library updates out of fear, but leaving them unpatched leaves the door wide open for supply chain attacks.
Yeah, the report specifically points back to the devastating Log4Shell vulnerability in 2021 and the escalating NPM supply chain attacks since then to prove that this isn't just a theoretical risk.
Hackers specifically target the outdated dependencies that high-debt startups are too paralyzed to update.
Though, to be fair to the 2026 landscape, the report notes that modern AI coding assistants are finally offering a bit of a lifeline here.
They really are.
Yeah, these AI tools can now simulate library updates in a sandbox, predict exactly where the breaking changes will occur in your specific code base and automatically suggest the fixes. It drastically lowers that fear barrier for developers to patch their systems.
Which is huge.
But even if you fix your own internal code and dependencies, you still have to talk to the outside world. Here's where it gets really interesting. API design debt. Building an application programming interface without versioning or without pagination or proper authentication scoping. I like to think of this like changing the locks on your apartment but forgetting to give your roommates the new keys.
That's hilarious.
Every single time you try to fix your own security or upgrade your own system, you lock out the very people who live there.
That analogy captures the cascading failure perfectly. Because when you rush and build a flawed API, every single customer who integrates with it is now hard-coded to your broken design.
Ouch.
If you decide to finally fix your API structure a year later, you can't just deploy the fix. You have to coordinate breaking changes with every single integration partner you have. The debt scales with your success.
So the more customers you have building on top of your platform, the more catastrophically expensive it becomes to fix the foundation.
Exactly. And all of this culminates in the final, perhaps most human layer of the problem, which is documentation debt. When all the architectural decisions, the deployment processes, the reasons why a bizarre workaround was implemented.
When all of that lives purely in a single developer's head rather than in a written run book.
Right. What's fascinating here is that if you look at all these categories together, schema, testing, dependencies, API design, and documentation, not a single one of these is merely a code problem.
They're business problems.
They are foundational business bottlenecks. They actively penalize growth, compounding every time a new engineer joins the team or a new customer signs up.
That transition from a code annoyance to a fatal business bottleneck is exactly what pushes a company into the danger zone. The report maps out what happens when these different debts pile up and interact. It stops being a slow leak.
It becomes a sudden existential company killer, triggered by a few specific thresholds.
So let's talk about those thresholds. What's the first one?
The most immediate threshold for a growing startup is Series A or B, due diligence. Investors aren't just looking at revenue projections and user acquisition costs anymore. Institutional investors now routinely conduct deep technical due diligence.
They're sending in the auditors.
Yeah. They deploy third-party auditors to run static analysis tools directly on a startup's code repository.
They're looking under the hood to see if the engine is held together with duct tape.
And if an auditor finds that test coverage is sitting below 20%, or they uncover massive architectural schema debt, it doesn't just result in a stern talking to from the board. It directly tanks the company's valuation.
Wow.
In some cases, it kills the deal entirely. Technegian actually notes that they are regularly brought in to run pre-audit remediation programs, specifically to protect a startup's deal value before the investors ever get access to the repository.
That makes total sense. And the second existential threshold is that AI feature competition we touched on earlier. If your database is a monolithic nightmare, you simply cannot support real-time personalization or anomaly detection.
You're just stuck.
Right. So your competitors launch these massive AI-driven value adds, and you are stuck trying to figure out why your overloaded text columns are crashing the server. The feature gap just widens every single quarter.
It's brutal.
But I want to ask you about the third threshold, because it's the one that feels the most personal to the people doing the work. Engineering attrition. We talk broadly about velocity and extensibility, but what does it actually feel like for the engineering team waking up and dealing with this every single day?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the psychological toll on human beings is severe. Experienced developers consistently rank codebase quality among the top factors in their overall job satisfaction.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
When an engineer loses confidence in their ability to deploy without breaking the system, when they spend 40% of their week hunting down obscure bugs in someone else's undocumented code instead of creating new things, the drive to innovate completely evaporates.
They just burn out and leave.
They leave for companies where they can actually build. Senior engineers flee high-debt code bases. And remember that documentation debt we just analyzed?
Oh, right. It's all in their heads.
Exactly. When those senior engineers walk out the door, the unwritten institutional knowledge vanishes with them. The only person who knew exactly why the authentication system was wired that bizarre way is suddenly working for your competitor.
Leaving the new junior engineer staring at a wall of spaghetti code, completely terrified to touch anything.
And the data backs this up. losing just two or three senior developers from a highly complex, high-debt code base causes a 6 to 12 month recovery period. Just stabilize the engineering function.
6 to 12 months.
Yeah. You aren't just losing code efficiency. You are actively driving away your best talent.
Okay, we have firmly established the severity of the crisis. The house is on fire, the wiring is bad, the talent is fleeing, and the investors are slamming the door.
It's bleak.
It is bleak. But the goal of this deep dive isn't to induce a panic attack. The Technisian report pivots here to a very practical remediation playbook. Actionable mechanisms a company can use to fix the ship while it's still sailing.
Thank goodness. Before a team can even think about paying down this debt, they have to know exactly how much they owe. The first step is to quantify.
So measuring the mess.
Right. You have to turn vague feelings of engineering dread into objective, trackable data using static analysis tools like Sonar, Kube, CodeClimate, or SourceGraph.
The report mentions these tools spit out metrics like cyclomatic complexity scores. What exactly does that measure?
Yeah, so cyclomatic complexity is basically a measure of how many overlapping, tangled decision paths exist in a single piece of code. It counts the if this then that statements.
Okay.
If a score is incredibly high, it means the code requires mental gymnastics just to read it, making it highly prone to bugs when someone tries to modify it.
So like a flow chart that just looks like a bowl of noodles.
Exactly. When you run these tools, you move from a vague complaint of, I think our code is messy, to a precise diagnosis. Like, we have exactly 34 critical vulnerabilities, 12% test coverage, and a cyclomatic complexity score that guarantees our next feature launch will fail.
Once you have that precise diagnosis, step two is triage, because you obviously can't fix everything at once without halting the business entirely.
Triage is about ruthless prioritization. Security vulnerabilities in your dependencies are critical. They get patched immediately.
Right.
Architectural schema debt that is actively blocking your product roadmap is high priority. But minor style inconsistencies or low-level code quality issues that aren't touching core systems, those are low priority. You fix those opportunistically, if ever.
Which brings us to the execution phase, and honestly, the concept that causes the most friction in the entire tech industry, the 20% rule.
Here we go.
The report insists that you must allocate 20% of every normal development sprint entirely to debt remediation. You should never do isolated, massive debt sprints. But I have to challenge this from a real-world perspective.
Okay, let's hear it.
I've been in those board meetings. A CEO wants the new dashboard launched by Friday for a major marketing push. How do you actually sell a continuous 20% slowdown to a board of directors who just want the new shiny features right now, saying, we need to pause to do a debt sprint? It sounds like you're telling the CEO you're halting the entire business just to clean your room.
And that is exactly why isolated debt sprints always fail, and why the 20% rule is the only mathematically sustainable way forward.
Because it's invisible to the board.
Partially. If you try to schedule a dedicated 2-week debt sprint, stakeholders will almost always veto it because it feels like zero business value is being generated. It's too visible of a halt.
Right.
Instead, you have to think about this like reinforcing the foundation of a skyscraper while people are still working on the top floors. You can't evacuate the building for a month to replace the concrete. You have to swap out the steel beams one by one every single day while business continues as usual above you.
That makes a lot of sense.
Baking a continuous 20% allocation into the daily workflow shifts debt reduction from a defensive, highly political pause into standard, non-negotiable operating maintenance. It ensures the company steadily reduces the burden without ever asking permission to stop innovating.
And finally, because remediation without prevention is just bailing water out of a boat with a hole in it, you have to plug the hole. You have to prevent new debt from entering the system. The report strongly advocates for using ADR or architectural decision records.
Yeah, ADRs are crucial.
How does a simple text document mechanically prevent technical debt?
An ADR forces a developer to record the why behind a decision at the exact moment they make it. It captures the context.
Ah. Oh.
So next year, when a new engineer looks at a weird piece of code, they don't rip out a critical workaround just because it looks messy. They read the ADR and realize that messy code is actively preventing a system crash. It eliminates documentation debt entirely.
And you pair that with automated checks, right?
Exactly. Combine that with automated gates in your deployment pipeline that physically reject any new code if it lacks test coverage, and new debt literally cannot be merged into the system.
The report also points out that Technician embeds their own specialized developers alongside a startup's engineering team to execute these specific reductions. That way, the startup's core team keeps shipping the product while the foundational mess gets systematically cleaned up by experts.
It's a highly pragmatic approach for startups that simply don't have the internal bandwidth to tackle the debt themselves. It separates the maintenance from the innovation, allowing the startup to regain its velocity without burning out its own staff.
We've covered a massive amount of ground here. To bring it all together, technical debt is no longer just messy code for engineers to complain about at the water cooler. In the hyper-competitive 2026 AI landscape, it is a highly quantifiable financial anchor.
A heavy one.
It costs hundreds of thousands of dollars in lost time, it directly torpedoes institutional investment, and it burns out your absolute top talent. Ignoring it isn't a strategy. It is an active choice to slow your own company down.
Precisely.
So what does this all mean? As we wrap up this deep dive, I want you to think about the source material we just unpacked and apply it to your own context. Ask yourself, what invisible debt exists in your own life or your own work? What foundational messes are you actively ignoring today just because you're moving too fast that are guaranteed to cost you 100 times more effort to fix tomorrow?
It forces a total reevaluation of how we measure progress, which leaves us with a final, slightly provocative thought to ponder regarding the future of this whole concept.
Oh.
We spent this time discussing how AI requires clean code and how AI assistants can help test updates. But what happens in a few years when AI context windows expand exponentially?
That's a fascinating question.
What if tomorrow's AI agent can ingest an entire tangled monolithic code base overnight, map every single hidden dependency, and spit out a flawlessly refactored, perfectly documented architecture by morning?
Wow.
If AI effectively becomes an automated, instantaneous debt forgiveness program, does the concept of technical debt even exist for startups in 2030?
It makes you wonder. Maybe the ultimate solution to the debt we've created won't be changing how human beings code, but handing the messy closet over to a machine that can clean it in the blink of an eye. Until then, keep your foundation solid, and we'll catch you on the next deep dive.